It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... So, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. I found my mind in a brown paper bag.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Giants. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Michaels, Jay-Z on the board. Get the Matt Weber back out of here. Jay-Z's back. Females take control again. You had it all last week. What do you think?
Absolutely. Yes. Females always are in control.
Oh, God. S&P futures down 10, Dow futures down 72, NASDAQ down 32. So you don't subscribe to Don Corleone, women and kids can be careless, men can't be? You don't buy that?
No way.
Okay.
No.
All right, just saying. Carnage over in Asia, Shanghai down 75 points. It's almost 3%, 2486 below 2500. Nikkei down 182. Hang Seng, not so bad, only down 7. But mainland China, not so good. Lou, how are you?
I'm doing okay. We had our first big snowfall out here, or good snowfall out here in Denver over the last week, about 5 inches. And given the way things go here, it's going to be above 70, I think, on the weekend. So with bright, sunny, gorgeous weather, is back here. That's a welcome relief.
Lou, the market is. Very nervous. We had big sell-off, and then we had a huge run-up, which is not maybe a third of the way back, 40% of the way back, not necessarily a Fibonacci retracement, which is usually, I think, about two-thirds, what David and our contributor, Kevin Reardon, used to say. They were into that stuff. Now we've been a little... We looked like we were going to sell off yesterday, then we didn't. Now this morning we're down some. We're beating up on some of these other countries. This Saudi thing is a little bit of an issue. I also wanted you to comment a little bit on if you listen to anything to what Kevin and I were saying yesterday about this Kansas trial. And why is it, Lou, that I'm supposed to be the liberal, even though I feel like I'm free since I'm in the middle. I'm not on either side anymore. Why does it bother me, maybe because of your influence and other people that are on the show, why does it bother me whenever I see a federal government, law enforcement, not doing any of the things that I want them to do in terms of online stuff where friends of mine I know that have had money fleeced out of various accounts and so forth, and they won't even look at it? They're all over this Kansas situation. Why do I care why do I want to have 40 people from the Fed working on whether Adidas gave somebody's uncle a pickup truck? Why do I care?
Yeah, I'm not sure why that's a federal crime. I'm not even sure that there's a victim. I have to think of this as some FBI agent or some FBI regional director decided, I'm going to make a name for myself. I'm going to make a name for my agents, and we're going to go after these guys. If we can find one false statement or improper statement that was made over an email or a phone call, we can get these guys on wire fraud, and then we're off to the races. I'm not sure why this is being prosecuted by the feds. This smacks of state, a state case, but I don't know. To me, this looks like a classic case of prosecutorial overreach. Somebody who wanted to make a name for themselves Somebody got tipped by somebody's brother that this was going on, and they thought, you know what, this will be a clean kill. I'm still not sure exactly what the offense is. The wire fraud is a generic thing that they might be able to get them convicted on, but you can convict almost anybody on wire fraud if you have a case going, just because of things people say in email or whatever. And that makes it a federal offense. I don't know what I think it's fraud, but I'm not sure what the fraud is. I think it's maybe bribery, but bribery typically is not a federal offense. That's a state offense. I'm guessing what they did is they took basic state law kinds of things, and then they said, well, there's a wire fraud element here, so that gives us federal jurisdiction, so we'll take the case.
Well, I think if you wanted to be a bleep, I suppose if somebody gave a kid $20,000 and either you didn't pay the gift tax or he didn't pay the tax, there's an internal revenue issue. But I mean, Kevin was he was well up on this stuff, but we needed you. Not that he didn't do a good job, he always does. I don't get the just because the feds give every university money. So if I buy a bond in IBM, I get to investigate everything there, or what? I just loaned them money.
It depends, but generally the role is that if you take federal money, you potentially open yourself up to federal jurisdiction and federal investigation.
I guess I get that. I question it, but I get it. My overriding question was, and Kevin basically said we needed Lou because we don't want to spend too much time on this because we talked about it yesterday. What if now somehow or another, some genius or some idiot has defined me as an alumnus of Notre Dame, even though if I ever gave him a dime, it was years ago, and I've surely stopped for a lot of reasons. But somehow I'm a partisan no matter what. I could root against them, I could bet against them, but in somebody's definition, I'm a partisan. But let's take them out of the picture. I love Sister Jean. Okay, so I find out about a guy choosing between UCLA or Kansas and Loyola, and I just got this eerie feeling that somehow or another UCLA or Kansas are going to come up with some money for the guy, and I meet him up there at the local McDonald's, and nobody knows who I am. I got my hoodie on, and I go, all right, have these other bleeps offered you any money? Well, yeah. Okay, fine. Have you taken it already? No. All right, don't take it. Go outside, open the back seat of my car. There's $20,000 there. Or you see that pickup up there, out there. Here's the keys. Give it to your dad. Why can't I do that, Lou? I don't have anything to do with Loyola. I just want to screw one of the other schools that's paying somebody off, and I like the fact that he's going to get a Catholic education. And the next day, I get a kid who's real.
Well, yeah, this is effectively what supposedly happened with the recruitment of the guy who's the quarterback for Carolina, whose name I always forget whenever I think of it, who was at Auburn.
But I might decide to send a smart kid to the Air Force Academy tomorrow. Not that smart kids don't go to Loyola. Or I might decide to send a guy for football to Vanderbilt or someplace because I like that place. I mean, why can't I do that?
That's a good question. Well, so reason number one, I don't think that's a federal offense. It might have to be reported as income, but I don't think there's any federal offense there. And notwithstanding your protestations, I don't think that there would be a state offense. It would be a state offense either if again you had no connection to the school, didn't care, whatever. That would be a gift of money. You know, hey, go there and you're going to get paid. I'll give you a scholarship. I don't think that's a federal offense, and I don't think that would be a state violation either. The feds, I'd obviously looks fishy as all get out, and the feds could come in and I think do an investigation if they wanted to, if they thought you had engaged in some federal, federal crime. Again, mail fraud is the usual, wire fraud is the usual, is the usual connection. But the short answer is that this kind of thing, I think, is the reason they took this case is because of publicity. They wanted good, they wanted some publicity for their people. They wanted to get, you know, show, hey, look, you know, we can check this. This is a really corrupt system. It bothers me. This sounds kind of on a theme that you and I have talked about before, about federal prosecutorial discretion. And this is a classic example of it. Why is somebody doing this? Why are the feds looking at this versus some other more serious type of offense? Well, it's because they have discretion to do so. And when you have a wide-ranging federal statute that gives jurisdiction to the feds, you are at the mercy of a federal prosecutor or federal investigator who decides, you know what, I'm going to make an issue here, and I'm going to go after these guys. And if I can find something to hang them on, I will.
Okay, having said that,
I think that's what this is an example of here.
All right, I'm gonna do something real quick here, Lou, which I shouldn't do to you. But you know what? That's really the theme of the show, is we try and talk about all sides. And I've had some people send me stuff, including Kevin. What if we're talking about, you know, a guy like me who doesn't, could care less. I just want some kid to go to Loyola for some reason. You know, whatever, because I like the coach and I like Sister Jean. I also am hearing from elves, shall we say.
By the way, that would be a violation of the NC2A rules. That would be the major, at least in my opinion, that would be the major disincentive.
Why am I bound by their rules? Why can't I give you 20 grand?
It's because they are operating, much like any other regulatory agency, they operate on sort of a theory of lowest common denominator. Your heart may be pure, but, you know, the next 10,000 guys behind you, their hearts are pure.
Well, that's kind of where I'm going with this next deal. With the amount of money that's entering college sports from the bazillions of dollars for stadiums and coaches and Adidas and you name it, to me, from what my elves tell me in the whispers in the wind, Lou, is that these kids are almost getting involved in a mafia where they're getting paid, and they better do what the guy tells them or else.
I think that's a real risk, and especially in places like basketball where you've got an organized system that hooks these kids, you know, starting in middle school.
Well, I think if you take the pickup truck for the uncle and you take the payment, I'll just lob a name out there for Florida Institutional, which doesn't exist, and all of a sudden on your name day you say, guess what, I'm going to Alabama, I think you got a problem.
Well, I think that's a very real risk. Nobody's really talked about that yet. That, of course, is another factor the NC2A looks at or is concerned about, is the undue influence that these guys can have. And then from there it goes to, you know, you're at the school and we've given you all this money. Okay, kid, now we need you to throw a few games. And that, you know, that's where everybody's kind of terrified of going.
Well, Lou, I just
said, I know that's already going on.
Let me ask you one last question, and we're going to talk about the Saudi stuff. I don't understand. I mean, I'm sure no PhD in economist, although we sure have a bunch on the show. To me, Lou, I don't know if I just learned this differently than other people, or maybe being on the trading floor for 18 years, and whenever you saw something that it wasn't a, shall we say, perfectly competitive environment, the people's behavior and the graft immediately piled in. I mean, I've seen it at so many different levels that maybe it's just a second nature to me. Maybe it's because I'm from Chicago. But why doesn't somebody think, okay, that if you have a situation where there's massive amounts of money, obviously there for the taking, and one group is artificially held down, okay, in terms of the money meaning the players, and college football, that there isn't going to be some sort of payments around the rules, okay? Because people, obviously, if Adidas is throwing up $1 billion for a school, they care about who gets there. Why don't people think that there isn't going to be this semi-mafia build up around, and how are we going to get these people money? And if you're going to get somebody money, there's going to be a, quote, contract, which is your line of work, implied or for real, the implied ones being worse most of the time. Why don't people think it's not going to be the same as prohibition, for God's sake? It's the exact same thing. There's a need, and you're stopping the payment for it. Why is this a surprise to anybody? I guess is my question.
Oh well, I don't think it does surprise anybody, and this kind of conduct dates back to the very very earliest days of so-called amateur sports. I mean, if you look at what was going on in the 1880s and 1890s with college football, for example, it's hilarious. I mean, you talk about college football now. I mean, there were guys being brought into college from, you know, the coal mines and farms and heavy industries, who were, you know, hardworking guys in terrific shape, and they'd matriculate for the 3 or 4 months of college football season, and they get paid at the end of it. They'd leave college and they'd leave the college, be disenrolled, and they'd get paid.
Remember the the guys were older too. The guys who went to college were 22 to 25.
Yeah. Oh yeah, but yep. But it was. I mean, this kind of thing has been going on from day one, and the short answer is that you're crazy to expect that this money is not going to start filtering down to kids even in high school and in junior high, and it's because the potential for large amounts of money is there, and the potential to have that money come to you is there if you latch on to the kid early enough and are able to stay with him and ride with him the whole way. The crowd of hangers-on that is attracted to a high-level athlete in one of the major sports ought to be setting off warning bells everywhere. But too often these kids are not well advised by their parents. They don't come out of great economic circumstances, and so they know to stick their hands out. They know to put their hand out. They know to ask, you know, college recruiting, what's in it for me? You're making all this money. I should get some too. And that facilitates this kind of relationship.
Well, you're one of the few lawyers.
There's an implied contract. Somebody's not getting there. If somebody breaches the implied contract, you would think there would be consequences.
You're the only lawyer I know with an entourage.
Yeah, my entourage. Are you talking about the flies that follow me around as I walk down the street?
a question.
Mosquitoes.
Oh God, yeah. Well, mosquitoes do follow me. I don't know, the flies not so much, but mosquitoes. Hey, I'm gonna shift gears on you. What is this situation with Saudi? Wow, this is a tough one, huh? What's your?
Well, I mean, all right. So again, I'm my lawyer hat comes on. What do we know? We have leaked information, allegedly from the Turks, that this Saudi journalist, who is a U.S. resident, went into the embassy in Turkey and was basically tortured or kidnapped, tortured, murdered, dismembered, and then shipped out of ISIS and is gone, was killed.
Roach Motel, he checked in and he didn't check out, Lou.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what exactly happened. I think there's probably a very high likelihood that the Turks have leaked information, and again, this plays into their strategic interest. Let's not kid ourselves. The Turks are looking to go after an Islamic opponent, Saudi Arabia, a regional opponent. They are trying to weaken Saudi's relationship with the United States. You know, I love the fact that the Turks have suddenly gotten religion, so to speak, on the idea of imprisoning journalists, torturing them, and murdering them. Because, of course, Erdogan has swung very, very strongly in the direction of totalitarianism over there. He has greatly strengthened his government, and he's willy-nilly arrested hundreds of journalists and thrown them in jail, and that, you know, we just don't know what's happened to him. You know, my take on this is to look at this somewhat askance, just because we're being played here. The world is being played here by Turkey's alleged concern of some kind of moral position.
Well, why don't we just ask? Okay. Why don't we ask Apple what was on that watch? Because I'm sure they know.
Well, but see, that's what I mean. Apple watch wouldn't have done that, and they wouldn't have had access to it. You know.
What do you mean?
It's what happened is the Turks have got the embassy bugged, and the Saudis now know it, they throw this cover story out about his Apple Watch recording and stuff. And, I mean, that's a great cover story, but I don't think it's true. I think it's good old-fashioned, you know, good old-fashioned surveillance. And again, why are they leaking this? Now, having said that, so A, we need to look at this from the perspective of we're being played by a regional power seeking to undermine our relationship with another regional power. What do we do? You know, let's say the Saudis did this. What's our interest in this? I think we have some interest in the fact that we don't want this to be a norm for countries using their consulates as torture chambers or kidnap centers. And I think there needs to be some investigation and there needs to be some comeback to the Saudis. But if the Saudis come back and say, you know what, the guy was murdered in there, it was a complete error by one of our intelligence people, we have we've disciplined him, what are you going to do?
I'm shocked. The guy, you're like the bishop, Lou, that supposedly a mouse couldn't get across his church, and he's shocked there's bingo been going on for the last 40 years in the basement.
Well, no. I'm actually just saying. Let's assume that he was murdered. That they kidnapped him and murdered him. Okay. Now, what do we do? What's our response? First of all, what's our national interest? That's I come at this from a very Machiavellian perspective.
You sound like the guy who was on CNBC the other day.
What's our national interest?
He looked like a little Lou. The guy who was on CNBC the other day. Our national interest can change, Lou.
Fine. That doesn't answer my question. What's our national interest?
Well, let's put it this way. This dude has taken power. Okay. I've been trying to keep up on him, probably not as much as you. But
you're talking about Salman, not Erdogan.
Yeah, Salman, SBS, Salman bin, whatever the hell his name is. He takes over. He pretty much makes life miserable, I'll be charitable, for anybody around him on the same level, cousins and family.
Let's talk about why we're seeing this. I mean, I see this as an anti-Trump thing.
You asked me a question.
Because when Salman kidnapped about half of the royal family and held them prisoner in what was the hotel? The Ritz-Carlton.
Ritz-Carlton jail.
In Riyadh. And basically tortured people there in the hotel.
Yeah.
Until they agreed to either buy their way out of there or as far as I know, they're still in prison. When he did that, there was not a great outcry out of the press.
I think there was for a while, but
that was under a previous administration.
I think there was for a while, Lou, but like everything else in America, you can hold the president hostage, and after 4 days, everybody's tired of it. Things drop off the page. You and I have talked about that 100 times. Things drop off the page.
Khashoggi is not. Why not?
Because he's a journalist. He's from here, and that's a problem.
He's not from here.
Okay.
By the way, you're residing here.
Your president was very quick to say he's not a U.S. citizen, which means he's a second-class human, I guess. But here's my point.
It's a way of trying to define what is our national interest.
Okay. Where I'm trying to go with this is the guy does this, and he's a young man. He pretty much takes control. His old man's senile, according to Fari, the old man being the king. Then he tortures all these people. He basically takes a huge control over the place. Ramps up the thing in Yemen. Okay, he's got his stuff going on. Or is it Sudan? Wherever the hell they're fighting over there.
They're fighting in Yemen.
Okay,
in
now Syria, all, I mean, he's left. Let everybody know that he's in complete charge. This guy's writing stuff bad against the Saudi government, which you can see which way they're going here. We cut this huge deal with these guys. And right when we cut it, Lou, I'm sitting there going, I'm not so sure we want to be arming this guy to that extent. But then again, nobody asked me. And then all of a sudden this happens. And we've had a bunch of people.
Why are we arming him?
We're selling him $350 billion worth of high serious stuff. That's arming him.
Why are we arming him?
Well, but you can go down. I'm saying you can go down that road. What makes you think he's not going to be the worst person in the region 5 years from now?
Well, let me put it this way, and we now get back to real politics. Okay, which reminds me of a great line, and I believe it's attributed to Kissinger, talking about what was going on in Central America at some point. And you and I, I've said this on your show too. The reference was something like this. That guy, that head of that country down there, maybe a no-good tin pot, you know, Latin American dictator, but he's our no-good tin pot Latin American dictator.
Lou, we got to go to break, but by the way, that was Harry Truman. He's our son of a bitch, was the term.
Well, that's right. That's right. It got refined a little bit.
S&P Futures down 950, Dow Futures down 64, NASDAQ Futures down 31. Be right back, Stacks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomorrow's School. Michael's Jay-Z on the board. S&P futures down 10 and a quarter. Dow futures down 67. Maybe that futures down 32. Still only a blip from that huge rally we had on, Thursday and Tuesday, 500 and some points. Got a little bit yesterday, not very much. It looked like we were going to head south, and we didn't. We bounced right back up, and, we're down just a little bit on the close, but certainly nothing really to dig into that chunk of a rally the other day, at least not yet. Today, DAX now up 15.1%, FTSE down 5.1%, CAC around up 23.4, so, slow moderately to the upside in Europe, Asia not the same way. Nikkei down 182.8%, 22,658. Mainland China down 75, that's a hopeful 3%, under 2,500, I didn't think I'd see that. Hang Seng only down 7, so there's kind of a disconnect there. Oil's down 65 cents, Brent down 95, that spread now exactly $10. Exactly $10. Natural gas, $3.28. RBOB gas, $1.89. And we've got gold down a whole 50 cents. Call that flat. Silver down 13. That's a little bit of a move. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. Chicago weather is cool and breezy this morning and throughout the day. Clear skies with the sun shining. Today's high is 57 and the low is 38. Phoenix is also sunny today. Today's high is 81 with a low of 60. Dodgers beat the Brewers 5-2 last night and take the lead with a score of 3-2 in the NLCS. The Red Sox now stand one win away from reaching the World Series after the wild game against the Astros last night. The game ended with a final score of 8-6. Traffic is light this morning and only one accident to report on the Tri-State, blocking the left lane just before 95th Street. Expect up to 20 minute delays, and that's all I have to report. Back to you.
So, Lou, after watching the game last night, do you think
how is that? Are you talking about the Astros game?
Yeah, how is
fan interference?
I'm just going to say, do you think the people in the review thing are in touch with the marketing people as who they want in the World Series or what?
That would not surprise me one bit that tilted things that way. I was fascinated by that. So is it possible, for example, when you go up, this guy, the reason this is an issue is because of the incredible athleticism of the outfielder in jumping that high and getting his glove that far over the wall into the seats. But, I mean, let's just say somebody was trying to defend themselves. Let's say they weren't reaching for the ball. Let's say they were just trying to defend themselves from being hit by the ball, and they have their arms up and their hands crossed, and his glove bangs into him.
That's what the guy in that
because he's in the seat basically. Is that fan interference? I don't see how it could be. What if he runs? let's say the guy does a Bo Jackson. Remember when Jackson ran up the wall at it was the All-Star game?
Well, they had the padding. They had the padding, so you could actually stick your spikes into it, and almost push yourself up.
Right. So let's just say that you get some very athletic. Or on the Ivy at Wrigley, some very athletic outfielder who gets a good run at the wall, and he just climbs it. He jumps in, puts his feet, his cleats into the Ivy.
I think you'd have to check that guy to see if he was a squirrel.
And goes straight up, bounces straight up and gets into the stands. Falls into the stands and makes the catch. Is some fan trying to protect himself? Is that interference? I don't see how it could be.
I'm going to say absolutely unequivocally no. You know how this happens, Lou. You're a very liberal guy. You've got a first of all, the idea of having the height of the wall out there in such a way where somebody can get up over the top of it. I know those are highlight catches and so forth, but that's ignorant. I when you design a place, make the place 12 feet so somebody can't get there. Okay, that's number one. Secondly, if the guy does get up over the top and the ball is clearly over the yellow line and the fan's sitting in the third row, you might be able to catch it, but you don't have a right to catch it.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think once it crosses into the fan zone there, once it crosses the wall, if you can make a catch, great, but the fans just as much a right to the ball as you do.
I mean, the Bartman situation, if you're in Wrigley Field, obviously the on the foul lines, you know, the stands are such that the wall's low, so the infielder can lean in or crash in. As long as he doesn't leave the field of play with his feet first, he can lean in and he can grab the ball. But if you're in a second row and some poor guy is trying to keep the ball from hitting himself in the head, you don't have the right to have that guy out of the way. I've never heard of a fan interference call in the stands, Lou.
My take is that if the ball's coming in, if you're a fan, you've got the right to try to catch it.
Well, I mean, if it's a pop-up and it's the first row and you see the fielder coming over and it's a pop-up and you're not in danger, to muscle the fielder out of the way is really ignorant, but I don't think it's fan interference.
Does the fielder get to muscle you out of the way?
Well, I mean, if he leans into you and grabs it, then it's his ball.
I agree, but if I'm standing in that first row, these are the kind of angels dancing on the head of the pin questions that drive baseball fans crazy. If I'm standing in the first row, here comes the pop-up ball, and I stand up, and I put my hands up, and I catch it, and I look down as I catch it, and underneath my arms is the open mitt of the of the fielder. I don't think that's going to be called fan interference.
I don't think there can be fan interference outside the field of play.
Yeah,
and I think that ball was clearly outside the field of play. It was over the fence.
I think so too. So I thought that was a terrible call. Let me go back to the Khashoggi thing, and I'm not trying to defend what the Saudis did, because I think if they did what's alleged, or even if they just killed him, it's horrible and it's a violation of international law. There was a case involving a Russian defector or guy, Skripal, who left, was a foe of Putin's, who I think was kidnapped out of Britain. And so a little bit different circumstance, but an immediate response by NATO and the United States against the Russians. Clearly, because Russia's not an ally, and we don't need Russia for anything, or at least not, except putting our astronauts in space because of the stupidity of a previous administration. The Saudis are different. And so I sort of take a real politics view of this. What do you want us to do? I think there ought to be sanctions. I think we ought to very quietly tell American businesses, you deal with the Saudis at your peril. And we would highly encourage you to cut back on business contacts with them for a while. I would love if we had the capability to do this, I would say, you know what? I think we'll flood the marketplace with oil for a little while, and drop the price per barrel, and really hurt them where they're vulnerable in the pocketbook on oil prices. I think those are the actions we could take. I think there should be some response. Again, we don't know exactly what happened, but the minute we get, you know, confidence of what happened, I think we move on it, and we have to send some kind of a signal. I just want to point out that that's an easier thing to say than to do, number one. And number two, they occupy an important role for us with respect to Iran. Now, I will also say that the Saudis have their own interests at stake with regard to Iran, and I'm not sure how we look at it is, or our interests in there are somehow going to necessarily restrict or change their mind about how they're going to operate with respect to Iran, which argues strongly in favor of our being able to do something a little more a little more stringent.
Well, Lou, I think
there has to be a response. If this actually happened, there has to be some kind of response from us and the international community.
I think it goes a little bit further than that, and I've always had issues with this. When I read in high school that if you got shot anywhere in the world, you had about an 80% chance of being killed by an American bullet, yet we seem to think that that's okay. And it's not that other people wouldn't sell bullets if we didn't. So I get that part.
I don't think that's true anymore.
I don't think it's true anymore.
The,
no.
I think the prevalence of the AK-47 has changed that.
So we lucked out when we pick this up here for the break. We lucked out when Iran went out when Fari's dad and all the rest of that gang got is that we had gotten money from Iran for a lot of arms and we hadn't sent them yet. So we really didn't arm. He had some old stuff, but really didn't arm the Ayatollah with the new stuff. Now, the Ayatollah was a bad guy. And when Iran has become our enemy, not our friend, in the meantime, we've got Saudi as our force in the neighborhood, shall we say. Now we got this guy who, you know what, Lou, I'm going to say it. The dude is 9 miles of bad road. I mean, I don't think I'm making a huge prediction. He's a little Hitler, I mean, to me. And he's got all the instincts. Now the idea is, should we be doing business over there? We're going to have to buy oil, okay? I mean, there's no doubt about that. They need to sell. It's going to be on the world market. Do we have to arm him? I think the answer is no. I mean, I could see a world 20 years from now where Iran changes and they're our friend again. Now you got this guy loaded to the max against our friend. I mean, this could all change. We could end up giving our own guys fighting against our own F-35s. I don't want to do that, Lou. SP futures down 950, Dow futures down 64. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Lou Michaels, Jay-Z on the board. S&P Futures now down 13, Dow down 100. I'm doing a calculation here, Lou. That's what I do. I don't know why I do these things, because what people say sometimes bothers me, especially when they're supposed to be very, very brilliant. Why is that? Is that an issue that you find it is not so good with me, or what?
Say again. You broke up.
I was listening on the break to Alan Greenspan speaking on CNBC. Who I think is one of those brilliant men I've ever heard, could have been the worst chairman of the Fed I've ever come across. And some of the stuff he says, allegedly the guy would bury himself in his statistics every night, Lou, to the point where he knew this stuff backwards and forwards, and I would never pretend to want to get on the same stage with the guy to match numbers, but he's my premier example. And you know, again, if I met the guy, I'm sure I'd really like him and I'd learn from him. He's the people that you got to get out of the limousine, Lou. Somehow he just said that this is the tightest labor market he's ever seen. Lou, there's 96 million people outside of the labor market. How could it be so tight?
Well, it's what he means by tight labor market is that you've got 7 million jobs that are begging right now
if
to be filled.
Yes, if you go to a Menards, you're going to see a sign up for an $11 an hour job. And on the high end, I'm not saying that this is not a seller's market if you have certain skills, or if you've got if you want $11 an hour, you can go anywhere you want. I get that part. Or if you're working for a restaurant, you can demand $12.50, where 2 years ago you could find a place for $10.50. I'm not so sure. But my point, Lou, is if you look at the big numbers. Now, he was chairman during 1999, okay? I've got my
little... There was a boom. There was a boom going on.
I'm saying there were 207 million people in the civilian employable population. 139 were employed. We're in the workforce, okay? 133 of those were employed. So your unemployment rate was 4.2. There were 68 million people in this not in the workforce group. In other words, if you took the amount of people that were available for work in the civilian workforce, including all the people in school and everything else, and divided that into the amount of people that were actually working, you had 64% of those eligible for work working.
So our labor participation rates are low. We know that.
Okay, so
part of that.
But how can the market be so tight when there's 96 million people sitting on a sofa?
Because let me give you an example, and I don't have a number, I don't have a figure for how widespread this effect is, but there was a great piece in City Journal, and Jay-Z can pull it up, on the impact of the $15 an hour minimum wage, and its effect on labor participation rates. And it was written by a guy who's in business in San Francisco. And he says, I walked down the street to my facility and my restaurant and food service business. I think that's where he works. And I see guys hanging out on the street, homeless, unemployed, unemployable. He said, but they're unemployable in part because of the $15 an hour minimum wage. I might be able to use somebody, or I might be able to get some value out of the labor of somebody who is a drug addict or has mental illness problems, to the extent that they might show up for work occasionally, they might come in, they might be available, they might not have, you know, I would get some value out of that, but I wouldn't get $15 an hour of value out of it. And if that's the minimum I've got to pay them, I'm not hiring them.
Well, how much time do you think people...
I mean, that's, I don't, as I said, I don't know what kind of impact that has on that number. We've also talked about the incredible number of people on disability.
I mean, I'll tell you economically the answer to that question, Lou, and I think I'm right. In good times when the minimum wage is too low, raising it doesn't do anything bad for anybody. In bad times, if it's if you raise it too high, you're going to impact the market. If it's $10 an hour and the world is going by you and it's 20 years since you raised the minimum wage and you raise it to $10.50, you're not doing anything. Cause the low rate might already be 12.
Well, and my point is, of course, that this, the whole raise the minimum wage movement is a dishonest and foolish movement, because it doesn't understand the idea or what the reason, the point of putting a minimum wage in place was originally.
Right.
The point of putting the minimum wage in originally was to introduce inefficiency into the workplace so that it became uneconomical for you to work people 80 hours a week. That's the reason it was in there. It was designed to improve employment in when we were in the depths of the Depression. The idea that there is some minimum wage that needs to be set out there on this, I think runs counter to you know, the market and a bunch of other things. But I don't think we can ignore the impact that it has on labor participation rates, because if you set the wage, if municipalities artificially set the wage too high, they are going to depress labor participation.
I would have, it's a microcosm. It's a microcosm.
Pay for that.
But on the other hand, Lou, my blue collar upbringing tells me that when you talk about the people on financial news, and first of all, you know, I've taken some economics, and I know that if you set the minimum wage too high, you're not doing anybody a service. I get that part. But I also know that when you have people on TV making $1 million a year for doing God knows what, spending 80% of their day some days talking about how it's an outrage they have some poor businessman have to pay somebody $10.50 instead of $10. When I could put a shingle out tomorrow and say, wanted, new guy on CNBC, $500,000, and I'd get people 10 times better than people that are there. I mean, come on. How much time do we spend worried about paying the lower guy too much? We never worry about paying the higher guy too much, do we?
But the higher guy's compensation is at least on CNBC anyway, set by the market. That's
no,
what
it isn't.
People are bringing in.
I'm going to say no.
CNBC's willing to pay.
Do you think the people in charge of the big industries in this country now, that having their board composed of other people that run the other industries, is anywhere near a free market?
I'm just telling you that the CNBC example that you picked, and I knew you were going to go in this direction. The CNBC example you picked, their compensation, they're in the entertainment business.
Yep.
They were set at least in part by the market. Here's my concern, and this is you know, I think fairly, you know, straightforward. To the extent that we are not allowing market rates to set this compensation, we are affecting the labor participation rate. Labor demand right now is so high that we are seeing an end to we are seeing the market automatically deal with the ban the box legislation that's been enacted over the last few years under the Obama economy, where employers were inquiring about the criminal histories of people coming into the workforce and not hiring people if they had felony convictions. That sounds reasonable to me, but it creates a problem with certain populations. That's all going by the wayside now. There was an article, I believe a month or 2 months ago, that talked about the fact that employers are saying, yeah, we're not really going to worry about criminal convictions anymore unless it's for something like murder. You know, the run of the line, minor drug possession, that kind of stuff, even felony drug possession, as long as it didn't involve, you know, some horrible thing, some horrible conduct, we're going to hire you regardless. That's how much of a demand is being pressed on labor right now, and the idea that you somehow artificially inflate the wages to such an extent that you can't bring guys like that in and hire them and work, let them work their way up through the workforce. The fact that you're not doing that, I think, is nuts.
Well, I think that there are people that show at some of these places. And again, I don't know all the answers, but all I'm saying is that the big one that got everybody all totally pissed off was when they said at they wanted the minimum wage rate at the Seattle airport or something to be, what, $19? Remember that story?
Yeah.
$15 bucks, whatever. And everybody, all the big shots on TV were giving you the, oh my God, look what we're doing to these poor people. Lou, you don't get, you don't get the hamburger spot in Seattle Airport unless it's a gold mine. That guy is given how many million dollars a year selling hamburgers? Maybe three times the price as anywhere else. That guy has no more business playing a dishwasher $10 an hour to man in the moon. I mean, in that little microcosm, I think the minimum wage should be 25. They've been given a monopoly, for God's sake.
Well, of course, the government does that. You see that with government contract, any kind of government contract situation where you're hiring, you're coming in to fill government wage rate or a government position, the government sets the wage rates. And you have to go with the prevailing wage rate.
Well, we got a dash, but if I give you twice as much as I should to rebuild the Dan Ryan, I want you at least to play union wage. You gotta meet me halfway, bud.
Right? Well, I think you see that. I mean, that's an artificial market, and you see those kinds of things happen all the time. Again, in the federal contracting, that's de rigueur.
All right, buddy, we'll talk about it next week. SP futures up, I'm sorry, down 1275. Dow futures down 97. We'll come back. We have Mr. Fari Hamzy.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. This is Jay-Z on the board. We have Mr. Fari Hams. We're leaking a little bit here. Dow's down on 15. I'm sorry, S&P down 15. Dow down 120. NASDAQ down 48. A lot lower than when we came in. Fari, how are you?
Well, I'm dry, so that's good news.
What was there danger of you being wet?
Hold on. I can't hear you. There we go. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Was there danger of you being wet?
We have torrential rains here a couple of days.
No,
you could not see a car in front of you.
No, was it like a tropical storm or just rain?
I don't know. It was kind of a little bit before, a little bit after. Kind of can't make up his mind. And plus, it's Florida. I mean, we usually have some cloud formation coming our way. So, and then, you know, 15 minutes later, half an hour later, sunny. Go back to the golf course. Hello.
Well, you got to keep the alligators within water. They don't want to be dry.
Yes, and we have plenty. Some are also ex-traders. Once you swim with them, you learn.
Don't you have a few crocodiles down there too? Some idiots have thrown the swamp.
I'm sorry. Again, you're getting.
Oh, don't you have a couple of crocodiles that some idiots have thrown in the swamp too?
I don't know. Yeah, listen. Last time they found a 12 footer here. So
yeah,
on a lake right in front of us. So
all right. So what's
let's change out of alligator conversation.
Yeah. So what are we doing with this Chinese? Market whack whack, and yet the Hang Seng hasn't gone with it. What's that all about?
Don't know. Above my pay grade. All I know is that that's the bigger challenge of all between the yuan, the dollar, and the market.
Your president says his biggest enemy is the Fed, not Saudi Arabia,
absolutely
not China,
wrong.
Not anybody.
Plus, this is the guy he put in himself.
Well, yeah.
No, the biggest enemy Trumpino has two things. Trumpino, A. Trumpino, or Grumpino, B. Trumpkins.
Yeah.
Because it's a closed feedback system. He goes to his rallies, he gives them a bunch of BS, they love it, that's their IQ. He comes back, through, they start saying it, and then he gets more in trouble, then he has to defend it, then he's got so many lies, sometimes he doesn't remember, either he's senile, or he's just not educated, or just a con man. He obviously doesn't understand certain things at all. He doesn't understand what Fed's role is. So it's sad. Oops. Hopefully on the 21st, 20 days from now, whatever it is, they'll give him a slacking he won't forget.
Well, what about your buddy, remember, was it Jesse Ventura? Or was it, I think, who was the mayor up there? Was it Jesse Ventura or Hulk Hogan? I thought it was, I don't know which one.
Jesse Ventura, wasn't he out of Minnesota?
Yeah, they are. Well, so was Hulk Hogan, all those guys. Hulk Hogan's,
okay. And?
Hulk Hogan's doctor was Dr. J's dad.
Right.
And what he said, I find if I never lie, I don't have to remember what I said.
If I never lie, what?
I never have to remember what I said.
Yeah. So it's just, and of course, we can't be short-sighted or naive and say, none of these guys, even the best of them, didn't lie or cheat or all that. But this one is so out front and blatant. He just forgot. I think he's senile.
I don't think he cares.
He must forgot what he said 2 days ago. I mean, how can you have zero memory? Or is it all convenient memory? Maybe he's got those Chinese ships inserted in him. I don't know.
He's got, as long as he...
Look at the latest issue is the Saudi thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. For someone to be that naive, that idiot, that stupid, that lowlife, to not go to his own CIA and believe... couple of guys from over there telling you how that place operates, and we don't know anything about this. Really? You have no clue. You must not read. How about those briefing books they give you? How come you don't read any of them? At least learn the basics of all these desks. All these countries have desks at the State Department. He hasn't manned them. He hasn't hired people there. You have 700 openings, so he doesn't have much of a feedback. He's in his own reality. He doesn't understand how those countries operate. Do you think even in Turkey, people can get things done the way they want, could have rogue operations? Are you kidding me? Do you think you tell me two Gulf Streams can take off and come back on rogue operations?
Yeah.
It's just...
All right,
at least come up with a better lie.
I know it's better.
And this is the funny thing is, I think it's just an insult to my intelligence to think we were this stupid. Hey, we're not very bright. We've elected them. Don't get me wrong. We have electoral college. Don't get me wrong.
My question, all right.
We're this stupid? I mean, come on.
All right, I got to ask you the question because you're the Middle East guy. I know you've been away.
I was here since 13, but go ahead.
I mean, okay. Out of the shambles that's Iran with their government that makes people disappear and the people don't like those guys so well, now you've
right.
got a
bunch. Yeah, that's typical.
I know.
You think
okay.
other places aren't?
What I'm saying is, now Saudi Arabia, this guy to me looks like a little Hitler. I mean, he's
well,
grown up.
You had to realize, Iran was Zoroastrian before the Arabs came.
Okay. Right.
Arabs were nomads. With all due respect, you may have some American Arab or American Arab descent listening or in your program, whatever. I'm not saying they were all cut from the same cloth, but history shows these nomads were very violent because of survival.
Yep.
They had no choice. It's a jungle without the trees. It's called sand dunes. They have to survive there. Think about that. Okay? The lion will eat the gazelle. Except it's the sand dunes. There's no trees. It's 120 degrees normal. I mean, things are nuts. And it only gets worse. You know, it's going to be... there's a location there last year. It's 157 Fahrenheit. Okay? Things are only getting worse from temperature-wise. But to survive there... You know, they survive on water and dates. You know, and onions. I mean, that's how they survive, if they could find onions. But very basic is how they survive now. When they came to Iran, they burned Iran down.
Okay?
Persia was the second largest empire. We never did that with the cities we conquered. Never did that. Our biggest problem was the reason we collapsed was it was too big to manage. We always worked with the local, if you're a student of history. We look with the local administrators. Keep them in charge. These guys, very violent people, as of their nature, at least in the history. Now they're a little bit more civilized. Now yeah, they have roads and drive cars.
Well, what was the population when the original King Saud gathered up essentially the Bedouin tribes, like 2 million people? Not up to what?
I have no idea. What do you call it? I was watching with a friend of mine. He's one hell of a Trumpkin, by the way. We're watching Lawrence of Arabia. You could see the violence there. Around that time. That was near the fall of Ottoman Empire, end of World War One, and you could see the savagery. To them, this is your guy puts bows headsets on, sends on some music, and goes on about cutting up this journalist into pieces. So you can stuff him in boxes. Think about that.
All right. So what I'm trying to get to is between the Iranian leaders, the Saudi leaders. And this guy in Turkey who looks to me like he's sowing his oats a little bit.
He's also dirty. Well, remember, the Iranian leader right now are the clerics. It's not the civil people. It's the religious crew, which is some of them were even actually trained in Kabbalah and Najaf. Yeah, because that's where Khomeini was kept. Khomeini was out there. So they do believe on that savagery because they believe in Sharia law.
Well, is there any...
Iranian clergy, by best sources I read, says maybe between 3 to 6% popularity. Okay? Why? First, they had higher after the revolution. But because of what they've done, there's about 120,000 people that have killed since the revolution. Extrajudicial executions.
That's pretty good.
Sham courts, kangaroo courts. They pick you up at 7 p.m., the court is at 11, 6 a.m. you're executed.
I guess my question is, do we really want to interject $350 billion worth of high potency defense stuff into that area?
No, of course not.
And yet
we don't need their oil anyway. Let them drink it.
Well, I think we probably need... What I'm saying is, there was a guy on the other day saying that this deal's so important because our people here are making these
planes... No, first of all, these numbers are not real. Give me a list. Give me the contracts. You know, listen, back of an envelope is not a contract anymore. Back of a napkin. I remember General Tufanian at the Iranian embassy hanging out with Kissinger and those guys. He would say, okay, you know what? I want 100 Phoenix missiles. He was aircraft executive. We'll pull out the cocktail napkin, give it to him, he would write on the back of it. He would give him a napkin. He would write up, fold it, close, slowly put it in his pocket. That was contract. Not anymore these days.
Well, Pullman,
you got to have these things planned out. You think a defense contract can just deliver as you wish? These are forward contracts. There have been discussions. Most of them were under continuation under Obama. He's just, you know how Trump can, Grumpino is about altering facts. So he just puts it together. Numbers look big. That's his only defense, and it's a false defense.
Well, at Pullman, they used to say, guys would call up from the Union Pacific, and they'd say, hey, you know those cars you made us like 10 years ago? We need like 25 more. Okay. That was the contract. I mean,
I'm not saying the contracts are not using latest hardware.
Yeah.
But we had to. Okay, there's a section called FMS in Paragon, Foreign Military Sales. Okay, Paragon gets 2% overcharge for at least to the last time. They give you what contracted for. It may not be as good as the U.S. version. Okay, but because they're running factories now, and they're trying to bring their fixed costs down. These large technical companies, the biggest task or challenge is the fixed cost, is not the variable cost. Variable cost is going to get paid for. Fixed cost may not go away. Plant, equipment, scientists, so forth. Not the riveting guys, not the guys who do labor, but the ones who come up with these ideas, because you have to keep them on payroll. And there's actually, I don't know, 800 million, maybe a billion, two, something like that. There's a reserve actually to maintaining very, very, very basic needs that we need. No matter what, we're going to spend that, right? But to keep the fixed costs down, you want longer-term contracts, okay? With everybody, whoever does it. Is it a service or is it a foreign military sales?
All right, Frank, can I explain?
And this way they can acquire parts and equipment in advance on an orderly fashion. Don't need to go peaks and valleys in the what's called load and capacity analysis. So you don't load up too high and you don't pare down too low. That's what kills you. Because the skill mix starts changing, okay? I mean, I used to do studies on these, on 747 especially, at Northrop, and then F-18. What happens in your local area? What's your skill mix? You do a lot of Monte Carlo simulations by skill sets. Okay, now, to keep that running for a long time, you have these long-term contracts that goes on. They get renewed. This is not a new sale. A new sale is when I walk into you and say, you know that gizmo that you have? Well, like let's say I come in and sell you a new cell phone. I'll tell you your cell phone needs to be updated. You say, yes, young man. Yeah, I haven't had this for 300 years. I said, okay. That's a new sale. But if you're getting the same cell phone again, an additional one for all your staff, same model, that's not a new contract.
All right, Fry, let me explain what you just said in more plain English, for lack of a better term. If you look at a contract like the F-35, there's a huge amount of research cost, development cost that goes into it that was a massive, massive overrun, correct?
Correct.
But unlike the F-22, which the same thing sort of happened, where the government, the Congress just said shut down the program, somehow or another with the F-35, now whether or not Boeing got involved or who the hell was involved, instead of shutting down the program because it was massively overrun, so in other words, let's say it costs $1 million to make the plane, like Farley's talking about, but you've got $100 million sunk cost into the thing, and you're only going to buy 10 planes. That means you got to add $10 million a plane, making it 11, okay, which is a big deal. So now what they did was they said, well, I'll tell you what, why don't we okay the fact that we're going to sell these F-35s around the world, so instead of us just buying 200, we're going to sell 200 some other place. So what you do is you cut the fixed cost applied to each plane in half. Where the variable cost is still the same. It's a tricky, weirdo way to do that. But, of course, now you're giving the people you are potentially going to fight the same plane that you have. Now,
question... Well, look at Iran. We sold that 14. My dad was involved in a transaction.
All right, now, my question for Iran...
Grohman bankruptcy. Grohman was grateful. Four years later, we had a revolution. So we send in the Canadians. I was just watching a video on right after the revolution, before the hostages. Canadians to come in, because that's the only ones who agreed, we kind of trusted, to have that kind of capability with that kind of missile. That airplane was not for foreign sales. It wasn't even sold to Israel. And Iran had 80 of them. And IAF, by then IRIF, the Islamic Republic Air Force, did an internal presentation, which I saw with the recording of it, that said, in Farsi, of course, in Farsi, that no, we're not selling this to CAD or anybody. Are you kidding me? It'll be a long time anybody will get anything like this. We're keeping it. Well, that was it. Now, the fear here was somebody could go wheels down at Baku. Baku is across the border on the western side of Caspian Sea. That's Russia. Do you know how much Russians would pay for some pilot to defect? Wheels down. That means safe, not crash.
Yeah.
Especially with those Phoenix on. Now, one thing they didn't tell you, Eric von Morbad, follow my dad, during the negotiations, it was a defense, defense staff somewhere out there, attached to the Joint Chiefs, went to Isfahan and disabled all the Phoenix missiles. So they became inert. You could shoot them, it wouldn't kick it in. Unless you hit head on as a physical damage, and it's very tough because it wouldn't be able to track right. If luckily you hit something head on, then it would make a damage to the aircraft, but it wouldn't even blow up. It made the payload inert, and then the navigation off. So it was only if you hit something by. So all money was paid for the
In general, without speaking out of school, what is the difference between the F-14 or F-35 we sell and the one we keep? I mean, I got to believe we're not selling the exact same aircraft.
I don't know about the F-35. Okay. I do not know because I'm not involved anymore. It's very detailed. I was involved with I worked with the head of B2 project, Mo Hesse. We will never sell a B2, but because it's stealth, there's some similarities. I would leave it as the following: electronic systems.
Okay, that's what I would
guess. Without getting to because that's the stealth now. In terms of F-14, that's not a stealth aircraft, but 2.5, 2.6, 2.7 range Phoenix missiles, 6 missiles, 24 track on an Og-9, and kill 6 at the same time. It was done by George Chalmers out of his aircraft, which really drawn hired as head of R&D at Northrop Palos Verdes Technical Center, a research center. I think 6 tracking 24 and killing 6 in an ideal condition was doable. Probably less is more realistic, because it's a bell curve.
Yeah.
And you're not going to engage 6 aircraft. If 6 aircraft are coming at you and you're the only one, I think you'll be more evading than trying to attack all 6 and hope that you're going to survive. But range over the horizon, at 50,000 feet, 60,000 feet, range over 40,000 feet, range over the horizon, you talk about over 100 miles. Nobody had it. So it would track, shoot, you shoot, don't forget, go to the next one, shoot, don't forget, shoot, don't forget. And an incredible radar called Og-9. But not, what do you call it? This is late 60s versions, the early 70s version. Not exactly IC chips. So right. You have some issues there. But now, so the boxes, black boxes, the black boxes that were sold to Iran at the time, unbeknown to us. Make sure you're sitting down here, young man. The Israelis came to us. Well, the head attache was a friend of my dad. Come over for dinner because my mom would cook the food he liked. He'd come over probably once a month. He came to us and says, "Our intel tells us." The boxes, the Israel wanted it, they would never give it to Israel. They only gave them F-15s. But our intel says from the Jewish lobby in Washington that they're going to be degraded. There won't be U.S. Navy issue. My dad tried to verify that, and the liaison office at Pentagon said, yeah, in so many words, yeah, you can't get it. Nobody will approve it. Senate will approve it. Boom. We're going to give you a lower version, a little bit watered down. My dad had to report back that to the Imperial Court in Iran in a secure telex. The word came back, what? We saved Gorman. They said, dad said, well, this is what they're offering. Next meeting, Israeli guy says, you know what? Get the boxes. Bring them to Haifa. And we'll go to Israeli Electronic Industries. We'll bet you we're going to beat them. We'll beat the U.S. black boxes for the same aircraft. You just bring a few. We'll work on them. ship them back. Then bring some more as you're picking these up. We swap them. Boom, boom, boom. So when my dad got back, that was one of his things he initiated. They would fly from Iran to Turkey to Cyprus. The Mossad navigator would come on, take off at 2 a.m., over the water, 50 feet, no lights, everything's painted. No flags. And no total radio silence. Coming to Haifa, land, they had to take off by 5. So not even the Syrians could pick up what these guys were doing. Over the water again, 50 feet, back to Larnaca, and this way, they updated the boxes. One of the things they updated to was the digital link. By using digital link, we no longer needed the Sentry, E3 Sentry, the AWACS, which Iran had bought but canceled last minute by the peanut farmer. These aircraft were not there.
All right, Farrell, we only have a few minutes. What about this market, buddy?
If these aircraft were not there, Iran belonged to Iraq now. Because when they attacked, when Saddam attacked, the F-14s would be high up and way inland, 100 miles inland, but because of that digital link the Israelis gave us, we would see where the takeoff points are and what's coming, what's the inbound. On that side, then we would get forward aircraft, forward bases to scramble, meet them at the border. They picked up on a radio saying, we don't know what these guys are doing. How come they're always there waiting for us as we get over the border from Iraqis, we're saying that. When you get to Iran, these guys are waiting for us. How come they didn't know that? One of the pilots of the war wrote that to me on Facebook.
Wow.
Says, you have no idea what your father did for us.
Hey, our friend Frank says that these big swings are a danger sign for the market. Kramer says it's just another buying opportunity. People are all over the map in their view here. What do you think? I mean, it's we don't get 500-point days all that normally.
I mean, I was blindsided myself, but I've recovered and I'm short now. I shorted last night. I think the volatility we're going to be entering between now and election night. I should have been short. I was short, actually, earlier. I was short most of August and part of September. What threw me off was Tesla. Tesla settlement moved the NDX so high up, I had to swap, go long. It was a small, actually, loss, but look at the gain I did not set in.
Yeah.
So, intraday, we were short. You know, Larry sits on our chat and he sees that. We were short intraday. You have to. You have no other choice. We've had an incredible 2 weeks. But, going forward, for our cash guys, some people who trade cash with just simple options, last night, I'm happy to report to you that we went short. The other thing is I have to protect my grounds. I'm one or two in the country. Look, I was cover Time and Digest. I have to protect that rating. I can't just sit still. The volatility is high. I think there was a piece I read from Goldman that said, stay short into election day, then buy it to the year end. I think that seemed to be working right now. We'll see. The fact that yesterday we could not rally at all. We had no momentum go up. And we only closed marginally higher from the high of Tuesday tells me, even though it was a big reversal, we could not go much higher. That with the Grumpinon company, it's time to stay short. And run it down for 2 to 3 weeks, because it's going to be fast. And then you buy it. Maybe a weekend before the election, you buy it, and then you sit.
Is he going to have any... two questions. Why was the China sell-off last night so concentrated in the energy issues? I would never have guessed that.
I have no idea.
And I'm
very provincial. Technology, technical, financial of the SPX only. That's plenty of play area.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. I mean, some people are thinking with this Saudi thing, we might get $90 oil. Out of all the things they want to sell, it's probably not the energy sector. But
we hardly import anything from them.
Well,
we're a net exporter.
No, but everybody, they're in the world market. Anybody who plunks their ship on the sea, they're just another ship on the sea. It's like a big grid.
I agree with you. No. They could play hardball. That's one of the series I talked about with a couple of friends over a cigar the other day. What they could do, and that's what Grumpino's worried about. Now he's got two enemies. One was Fed, now Saudis. Interest rates going up, oil prices going up. What is that going to do to the economy? Which the tax, already we've given back the tax break, we're going to charge, we're giving that back. What's going to do that? So, and they lose, the Republicans lose the House. Think about this. Interest rates going up, oil going up, you lose the House. His only game here is that the economy is doing well. Everything else is messed up. That story is going to go away too. So that's a nightmare scenario for the White House.
Yeah, well, the economy.
But they could play the good oil card. They could. And they probably would. Because, again, remember the Arabs, nomads, survival. Survival within sand dunes. Think about that concept. You and I can't even fathom that.
Well, I did watch Lawrence of Arabia once, and it was enough.
Yeah. I think, look, 2 weeks ago, what was it? Somebody wrote that. It says, if somebody comes to your house and stay, and you were there, has nowhere to be found, and it's taking you 2 weeks to give an explanation, something else is wrong.
Well, I wouldn't disagree. Hey, this thing with the Fed.
Oh, excuse me. We forgot to talk about Mueller. That little thing called Mueller, by the way. The great Princetonian.
We had no time. We have to talk about next week, buddy.
These are the feet of the desk or chair you're sitting on. Mueller, oil, interest rates, and house. Losing the house. Because that will create the avalanche of investigation.
All right, Fry, we got to talk about it next week, buddy. Have a nice week. S&P futures down 1275, Dow futures down 100. Be right back, Mr. David Adelman.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stars and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Anish. He's Jay-Z on the board. S&P Futures down 11 now. We were down not that much when we came in. Then we went a little worse. Now we're kind of middle down on 99. It was like 105, but it's still sort of on its lows. We got the NASDAQ Futures down 35, and they were down maybe 40-ish, but not much of a bounce. I mean, it's negative morning here. Big negative morning over in Asia. DAX only down 1, so call that flat. FTSE down 6.1%. CAC around up 20.4%, so these guys are... Europe is kind of sitting this morning out. Asia, Nikkei now 182, it's 0.8%. Shanghai, this is the big one, down 75 points, it's 3%, 2486. Never thought I'd see this thing under 2500, but it is. Hang Seng, however, not participating in the down move very much, only down 7, so let's call that one flat. So very odd. West Texas down 94 cents, now Brent down $1.29, so oil's getting hammered. The spread is like exactly 10 bucks. Natural gas, down 5 cents, 3.26. RBOB 1.88, so it's under 190. Hasn't been there in a while. And we've got gold now up a dime and silver down a dime, so not much going on there. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, sun coming up, it looks like.
It is. It's been up for a while. But anyway, good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:35. Chicago is cool and sunny this morning. Bit of a breeze, but clear skies all day. The high is 57 and the low is 38. Phoenix is sunny as well. Today's high is 81 with a low of 60. Dodgers beat the Brewers 5-2 last night and take the lead with a 3-2 score in the NLCS. Red Sox now stand in the win, stand one win away from reaching the World Series after that wild game against the Astros last night. The game ended with a final score of 8-6. There is one accident still on the tri-state, blocking that left lane before 95th Street. Now expect up to 30 minute delays. I apologize, and that is all. Back to you.
David, how are you?
I'm.
This is a crazy market, eh? We've had the Greenspan came out and said it's the tightest market he's ever seen. The Fed is now, Trump has called the Fed public enemy number one. Stuff going on in Saudi. Why do you suppose, if the oil prices are liable to go the other way, if we start fighting with Saudi, I don't mean a bullet fight. Why do you suppose oil's down over $1 today, and why do you suppose the Chinese energy sector last night got hammered? I mean, this is not all
because
intuitive.
The last two weekly DOE and industry weekly readings have been huge,
okay.
And perhaps intentional, maybe because we're anticipating, you know, whether it's, you know, Iran or trouble with Saudi or whatever, that they're storing more because they know they'll need more, but these last two inventory reports have been terrible.
Terrible, you mean a lot of oil.
Heavy, yep. Heavy duty.
Yep.
Big ads.
The one in Cushing, isn't that a private number? Isn't that whole area private?
What do you mean private?
I mean, it's not owned by the government. It's owned by a private company, correct? The Cushing terminal?
That I really don't know.
I think it is. I mean, I've heard that.
But, I mean, you get the information from there as well as New York Harbor.
Right. Well, I just, you know, I'm wondering how tainted it could be or if it could be tainted. Or how accurate it is, I guess.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I assume like everything else, they send a card.
Yeah.
And they say, what's in there? And they get the card back. And is it accurate? It's probably as accurate as the University of Michigan Sentiment Index,
yeah.
Which is probably not very accurate.
Well, the reason why I ask is sometimes people look at the head, and it's not the place or the government or anybody. It's people, you know, looking at one statistic and essentially blowing their own horn. I mean, I've seen
but
these
that's
things.
That's how it is in everything.
Well, I understand.
That's the argument for the chart, and I'm not being facetious,
yeah.
Because the vast majority of data that we get out of the government or out of agriculture is supply. Very, very little on the demand side. And, you know, you talk about planting intentions, you know, just as a segue. You know, what are you going to plant in corn and soybeans? Well, they're going to say what they want to say, and it gets published, and it moves markets.
Well, I mean, sometimes I've looked at those numbers and, you know, I'll see them come across and I'll say, oh my God, the oil, you know, 20 bazillion barrels above what's supposed to be in storage. And everybody immediately starts, you know, crawling on TV. And the next line is gasoline, you know, 20 bazillion barrels below what was supposed to be in storage. So you took it from one, you made it to another. All he did was miss the refinery mix. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and that's true because, you know, we have consecutive ones each week. We have the American Petroleum Institute, the API, and the DOE, the Department of Energy. And I don't track them, so I can't tell you, you know, how aligned they are. You know, it's kind of like, you know, comparing the ADP employment versus, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But I know that there's several times where they're diametrically opposite.
Yeah, which is sort of, well, Frank.
How does that happen?
Yeah, well, Frank has been.
I mean, I'm not saying it's consistent. You know, maybe it's 20% of the time, but why should it be 20% of the time?
I don't disagree. One thing I did want to ask, well, several things I want to ask. One is our friend Frank has been writing in that in his and this isn't more of an experience. And he's somewhat of a chart guy. I don't think he's as diligent at it as you are. But he tries to pick when the market starts doing this stuff. When you start getting these moves, it sort of get bigger and bigger. It kind of predisposes a pretty big move. It's like the little earthquakes you hear before the volcano going off. Is that shown anywhere in any of your stuff? I mean, where would that show up?
It's actually when you have a straight down move, in like we did in the indexes for, you know, 7 days. And in actuality, I mean, what people really ignore is underneath the indexes, because of the weighting, whether it's capitalization or price, the move really began, you know, right after Labor Day and continued, because, you know, as of the low point in the index moves, you had, you know, 70% of the S&P 500 down 10% and more, and a third down 15% and more. So they were deep breaks. And someone did an analysis last night and said, you know, if you took an equal weight of the S&P 500, you made every stock in the S&P 500 equal weight, the index is down 4% for the year. So the indexes are not really reflecting what's going on underneath.
What how do you? I know what David. Well, what's as crazy as it may sound, there has to be rules, right? You gotta have rules and policies. But with option volatility, it's always been close to close. Okay, so if all of a sudden you have a summer, for instance, that basically nothing happens. It was like a few years ago where we didn't have a 1% move in, what, 2 years or something? Nothing happens. You know, I mean, it's basically you sit there with your feet up on the desk wondering what you're going to do all day and hoping the phone rings and somebody drags you out to play golf or something. Not that we ever do that, but we could have over that summer. Put it that way. Nobody would have known the difference.
Maybe then.
Yeah, maybe then we could have. And all of a sudden,
not now.
Well, all of a sudden now you start to get this. Okay, spoos are down 20 on the opening. They close even. The next day, they're up 20 and they close. And all of a sudden, 25. All of a sudden, the movements within the day start to be a little crazed, but they always, if they're down, people buy it on the close. If they sell, they're up, people sell on the close. So the close-to-close volatility really isn't changing all that much. And yet.
Might even go down.
Might even go down. But then all of a sudden, you're sitting there going, something's happening here. Well, it isn't exactly clear, like the song says. How do you or Fari or Frank, other than looking at it and observing it, where does that get picked up at?
Experience. And I don't want to be facetious,
no.
But when you see, as I started to do, and then I cut myself off, thank goodness, you have a straight down move, and then all of a sudden it gets whippy. Up, down, up, down, up, down, like what we're experiencing. It's one of two things. It's either bottoming out and the last of the sellers are, you know, excuse the term, puking.
Yep.
And the smart people are using the extension on the downside technically to pick up bargains. Or it's distributing again. It's a halfway type of the move, and it's distributing again, getting ready to repeat or largely repeat the move to the downside. So you do see this very often. And which way is it? You really don't know until you come out to the upside of the consolidation and say, hey, you know, it's a bottom and whoever sold there was wrong. Or you come out the bottom side of the consolidation until there's a breakout one way or the other. You come out the bottom side and say, hey, that was just the first part of the move.
Well, how do you, this has only happened, you know, to smaller occasions. I guess it's happened a few times in my trading lifetime, but I keep thinking and I keep saying that this reminds me a lot of the turn in 82, that all of a sudden you had interest rates here, and there was only kind of one way, and all of a sudden they started to move. It really, after many, many years. I mean, it wasn't like it was a month or two, because right when I started trading, and I've said a bunch of times, I was long for a year. I'm like, you know, not that long. I only had 10 grand in my account, so it wasn't like it was that long, but I leaned long for a year. David, and I barely survived, right? Because it was like a year from when it was obvious we were going to go up one of these days, or else we were going to go under as a country. Now here, but then I remember Joe Granville, the David Andelman of his day, and we started going up. All his charts, everything, you know, the names of which I don't even remember that you know. This one says we're overbought. This one says we're overbought. For God's sake, we have to retest this to prove that the low is really in. David, we never looked back because it was a revaluation. And I'm saying Joe was absolutely right in terms of his stuff, and yet it was a revaluation. It didn't matter when interest rates.
Do you remember the commercial? That was the classic.
I did.
when they'd interview him, he'd drive up to his security fence in front of his mansion in his green Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
Come out of the green Rolls Royce, make a comment that the market was bearish, get back in and drive back.
Yeah. But he totally forgot the fact that when you went from 12% interest rates to 8, every stock is going to be 50% higher than it was. I mean, right, the way that they were. So now I'm not sure that what the Fed, if we are going to 4% rates, which I don't think these guys are going to go too high. Even if they go to 3.5, which is, you know, to me is fairly normal. It should be a neutral number from where they're coming from, and from the habit people have of revaluing stuff pretty darn high. I think we're going to show. We could very well show. God, we're way oversold. We're going to bounce. Yet percolating behind the scenes is this revaluation that's actually going to be stronger than, I'm going to say, the normal charts. Is that an ignorant way of putting something in?
Yeah, but the charts will show that. I mean,
okay.
I'm not going to lie. Home Depot, I mentioned it a couple weeks ago or a week ago, is a classic case. One of the great retailers, great management, great founders, great, you know, contributors to charity. I mean, really an institution and part of the Dow and everything else. And, I mean, you know, you got a week ago, you got some of the price momentum indicators in single digits. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, this is an absolute stone buy. And it was for, like, you know, from 187 to, you know, 193 or 4. So, you know, it bounced up, you know, 3% or 4% in a matter of days. But then, you know, all of a sudden they start looking at the housing numbers and this and that and the other, auto numbers and the like, and they're, you know, been really terrible. And, you know, so it caught two downgrades yesterday, and now it's, you know, at new lows for the move, regardless. And so you had just enough of an upward bounce to ameliorate the extension in the price momentum indicators. And once that was, you know, neutralized, bang, to new lows. So it was really hard. Yeah, it was a decent, you know, 2-3 day trade to pick a bottom without a lot of risk. But if you tried to stand in front of yesterday's break, you got swiped in the butt.
Yeah, it's. I mean, if you make money one way or the other here, you gotta let's just say be happy with the double. I made that mistake yesterday. I bought some put spread that expired last night. You know, I paid like 11 cents for it. So I'm thinking, all right, you know, 500 point up. Well, we could go back the other way. Well, of course, I bought it, you know, half hour before the close, so it's only 8 cents on the close. And all of a sudden, yesterday morning, we start flying down. The thing gets like 19.20. I should have said, there, but for the grace of God, the thing should be zero now, and it's not. Get out of here with some money. And I'm on the phone with my guy, and all of a sudden it's 18, 17, 16. I go, let's give it a few more minutes, and all of a sudden it's like zero. it was a winner for maybe 20 minutes. You know, and,
it's unbelievable.
But
your original point that, you know, they fly up, they fly down, and then you settle near unchanged or relatively near unchanged in this atmosphere,
yep.
And the volatility goes down, and you say, geez, the volatility went down. Why was it so whipso when I was in the market?
Well, plus, I mean, it's almost at a point where if it's moving so fast, you can't put the order in. You have to say, all right, I bought it at 11 cents. I'm going to sell it at 18 and put it in. And maybe you'll get it. Maybe one day you'll sell it at 18, and 30 seconds later it's 50, and you're kicking yourself. But you almost have to be in advance because the tone change is just dramatic. I mean, it's not just that we bounce up. Now all of a sudden we're bouncing up, but we're pummeling the puts because they don't know any knows anymore. And same way on the upside. All of a sudden,
these
calls
even on these little trades, the spreads, they're not necessarily any wider, you know, on a November 2nd put, you know, at a reasonable strike price or whatever. You know, it might only be 5-6 cents, and it was 5-6 cents a week ago. But in this volatility, you know, I always pride myself in trying to get in between bid and offer. I'll save 3 cents on a 10 lot or 4 cents on a 10 lot, and you know, pays the ticket, you know, for the customer and that kind of thing. And I'd say I'm successful doing that 65-70% of the time. Not here. Here you want to sell. You got to be at the bid or maybe 1 cent above. You want to buy. You got to be at the offer or 1 cent below. You can't middle even a 6 cent spread.
Well, when you get one of these down days, there's not a whole lot of natural put sellers, David. I mean, I learned this, you know, when I was on the trading floor. Matter of fact, my sneaky trick was, if ever you had a down day, I'd see something that was, you know, 10 strikes out of the money that was offered, I'll show my age, offered at a 16th. And if there was 300-400 of them in there, you know, I would buy them. And people would say, what are you buying those things for? I mean, and the thought that they were ever going to be in the money, now of course, you know, once in a while they probably would be, but it never happened to me where I never sold them at, you know, like 10 or something. But I knew that people, is that if we went down even a little bit longer, somebody, what I'll use the term panic, and just want, just a high deductible, you know, insurance policy where I just need 400 puts. What are the cheapest ones I can get? And these things, now they're 16th and 8th, I'll pay an 8th. And I inevitably could sell them at an 8th once in a while, 3/16ths if I really got lucky. But I would essentially, you know, double my money in an hour. You know, of course,
right.
You can't market that. You can't say, because it happened 10 times in, you know, 8 years or 20. But the point being is if you in today's world, say for instance, I'm a trader on the, well, nobody's a trader on the floor, but a trader making markets, or even for my clients, if I wanted to have aggressive people, and I'm going to say, look, we're going to get another big down day here, and I don't know when it's going to be, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go down the chain and say to Spider is at 280. I'm going to buy, you know, a couple hundred for these two big traders I've got, you know, or whatever. Say I had five, whatever it is, or if it was a fund, I'm going to go buy, you know, 500 of say it's trading 80. I'm going to buy 500 of the 60 puts. You say, why in God's name, Chief, would you ever do something stupid like that? Because if I think there's a down day and people panic for the other puts, David, all of a sudden the 70 puts go to a $35 or something. I'm not going to sell those naked for myself or anybody ever, you know.
Right.
But now that I've got the 60s in the bank, I can sell the 70s for what I consider to be a huge number. And now now I may have sold the spread for $6. And the worst I can lose is another 4. Well, I'm never going to be able to sell those. I mean, first of all, I mean, we have some clients that quote are big enough where I could sell something naked short. I'm never going to, David. I mean, I'm always going to try and have the little guys under it first. So I'm essentially legging into a spread rather than. So I mean, there's things you can do to take advantage of the volatility that if you've never really been a professional, you don't think of. Your first thought is, you know, you hear people on TV, oh, when the VIX gets to 30, you just sell. Wait a minute, when the VIX gets to 30, it means that things aren't going so hot, right?
Right.
And it means that you call your broker and say, I want to sell 100 naked SPX puts, or SPY puts, and the broker's going to say, well, you're not cleared for that. You're not cleared for that.
And many of those same people, when the VIX was at 9, said, you know, and that's what took the market down in February. Well, you just sell there, too, because the volatility's gone away forever. It's always going up.
Well, and our the president of PTI, Dan Howe, my very bright brother, says, you know, he's got a lot of guys who trade the VIX. I mean, more so than I do. And they're constantly trading. He goes, you know, I think that the strategy in this thing, going backward and going forward, is whenever it gets down to 9 or 10 and we're never going to move again, you just buy it. And then and then all of a sudden, one time it's going to go to 15, and when everybody else is panicking, you sell it, you take the single, and you say, thank you very much. And you know what? I think he's right. I don't have the math to prove it, but I think he's right. Just when nobody else wants insurance, buy it, and then all of a sudden somebody's going to want it. It's very similar to me buying the things at a 16th and hoping some guy absolutely needs puts and pays an eighth when he never should. I mean, because I can win it all the time, David. I mean, all the time. I don't think I ever lost on one of those. No, these were days that moved. We're talking 1 out of 100 days. It wasn't like every day. I mean,
right.
I
get it.
But I mean, you're selling panic, right? But you can only sell panic if you're not panicked, correct?
That's right. Panic and fear is never a good strategy.
Right. So what are you saying today? Spoos are down on 10. We're 2806. Is there a number here? And what about this oil?
28's really important. And okay. The overnight low in the minis was 2800.25. Actually, 2798 to 2800 in the December mini is very, very crucial. That technically, I wouldn't say it's major. I'm not going to call it a breakout, but that's enough to really shake the shorts. And if you start closing below 2798 December E-mini future, then we're probably going to go back to the lows. But if that holds, I honestly think the at least an interim bottom, you know, pending the midterm elections, is probably in place. I'm 52% bullish and 48% bearish, so I'm just north of neutral.
Well, Dave, I'll tell you what, it is so good that for the people I have in our protected index stuff, and we're using a lot of the XLE as our index now with the oil stuff because we've been doing pretty good with the hedge in there. When oil got to 74, this is before the Saudi crap even started. The idea with Iran and Trump's going to squeeze Iran and blah, 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 that the next stop was really 85. We're going to see $100 Brent almost by acclamation by the end of the year. I would have given us, in the 10 days that followed, I would have given us 1% chance of the oil being down $6, and it's down $6. It's a good thing I have puts, because I'd have been so wrong on that one. I never dreamed we'd come back down like this after all that.
The oil's very interesting. I mean, it's really having a direct effect on the airlines and others. And again, December future, it's last at 68.76. 70 even to 70.40. Actually, 70 even to 70.37 was huge, huge support. Bunches of old highs, bases, retests, whatever. And if you're not, doesn't have to be today, but by tomorrow, if you're not back over 70.37, it's topped. But I kind of feel like you're going to have, I wouldn't try and catch a falling knife. I wouldn't buy it other than buying it on a stop. But you got all the oscillators that were so extended upside. What it was at 74, now they're extended downside. So I kind of think that a decent strategy is, let the market go, do what it wants to do, but if it ever closed back over 70.37, to buy it.
Well, we have our program has us rolling the puts up when it was 74, and the XLE I'm talking about. Had to roll them when the oil was 74, only because that's what we do, David. I would never cross my mind to buy the puts at 74. Because I thought the thing was going to be, by this week, we'd have been pushing 78. 79, just with the Iran thing. And now you throw the Saudi thing on top of it, and it's going the other way. That's why, I tell
it
you what.
Built up, and that may be bullish, like I said. It may be bullish. That may be the administration say, hey, build the storage stocks because we're going to have less imported and we're going to need it, and if not, we're opening the strategic oil reserve.
Well, I was just going to ask you, is that anything viable? If they do that, does it make any difference? I mean, can they make any difference with that other than the bully pulpit? I've heard that stuff is buried so far below it. It's crummy quality, and we paid people too much to put
Again,
it in there.
I'm
nobody
not an energy fundamentalist, but when I've seen it in the past, it does make a difference.
You know, it does. I just have also heard that it's crummy oil. You can't get it any place. You know.
All right, yeah, maybe it's psychological. I don't know.
Jay-Z, you got a question real quick?
Yeah, Michael Caine tweeted, and he said, what happens to Amazon when Trump cancels the postal agreement?
Good question. What do you think, David?
I don't know. I think Amazon's got so many pipelines, it's not going to make
a postal agreement
make a difference on FedEx.
It's a postal agreement between us and China. Let's talk about that more tomorrow. S&P futures down 10, Dow futures down 89, NASDAQ futures down 30. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.